Imagine you're hiking 10 miles deep into the Appalachian wilderness.
Okay.
You are entirely off the grid. I mean, you haven't seen a cell tower in hours.
Right. True isolation.
Exactly. You're navigating this narrow ridge in West Virginia's New River Gorge, and it's surrounded by nothing but old-growth forest and silence.
Sounds perfect.
Right. But then, as you hit the 5-mile mark, there's a subtle vibration on your wrist, wearable. It prompts you with a question. You tap it. And 20 minutes later, a $25,000 autonomous drone drops through the tree canopy.
Wow.
It hovers, winches down a steaming farm-to-table bison bowl directly to your GPS coordinates, and then just silently glides away.
That is wild.
No cash exchanged, no cell service required at all. Just you, the wilderness, and this highly localized mesh network that's anticipating your every need.
It completely shatters our traditional understanding of what it means to be off-grid.
Yeah, today we are looking at the financial blueprint for a company making that exact scenario a reality. Welcome to the deep dive.
I'm so excited for this one. Because, for decades, going into the wild meant this inherent trade-off.
Right, you had to rough it.
Exactly. You trade connectivity, comfort, predictability for that raw experience of nature.
Yeah.
But the document we are analyzing today argues that trade-off is just a relic of outdated infrastructure.
It really does. So we have this incredibly dense, just fascinating document on the table today. It's a master business plan and financial model for a company called Digital Adventures Outdoors, RUS, LLC.
Quite a name.
I know, right? And it also includes details on their technology partner, DeReticular LLC.
Yeah, that partnership is key.
It is. We are going to unpack how this company is attempting to radically redefine wilderness hospitality. I mean, we are talking about blending off-grid microgrids, sovereign hardware, and this highly lucrative dual-revenue AI business model.
All to create what they call the hyper-connected wilderness.
Yes, exactly. So whether you're an entrepreneur looking for unconventional business models or a tech enthusiast curious about edge AI.
Or honestly, just someone who hates eating a soggy sandwich on a hiking trail.
Right. I mean, this document reads like a absolute blueprint for the future of ecotourism.
It's a masterclass in cross-disciplinary innovation. When you sit down and really look at the logistics, the energy capture, the real estate play, they aren't just building a nicer campground.
No, not at all.
They are fundamentally rewriting the physical and digital infrastructure of outdoor recreation.
So before we get into the crazy hardware and the financial math, we need to understand the vision. Like, what exactly are they trying to build in the woods?
Well, to understand why they're buying multi-million-dollar GPU racks and autonomous dune buggies, you have to look at the psychological profile of their target customer.
Well, they paint a very specific picture.
Very specific. It's deeply rooted in the modern urban condition. The business plan basically asks you to put yourself in the shoes of a high-net-worth tech executive living in Washington, D.C.
Okay, so high stress.
Immense stress. This is someone suffocating under back-to-back virtual meetings, constant urban congestion, just an always-on digital lifestyle.
Yeah, they want out.
Exactly. They possess this profound, almost desperate desire to escape to the rugged isolation of the Appalachian Mountains.
But, and I think this is the core friction they identify, that executives' desire for nature completely clashes with the reality of nature. The
Yes.
plan outlines what they call the old way of off-grid travel, and it is just riddled with friction.
It's a nightmare.
Right. Think about the logistics right now.
Yeah.
You leave DC, and almost immediately you're navigating these 2-hour driving stretches through complete cellular dead zones.
And you're trying to manually coordinate shuttle drop-offs with local guides.
Using like a spotty connection at a rural gas station.
Right. And when you finally arrive at your rental cabin, the utility power is probably flickering.
Oh, yeah, because you're sitting at the absolute tail end of a degraded rural grid line.
Exactly. And the heating is likely some highly inefficient, carbon-heavy diesel backup generator.
Smells terrible, super loud.
Yeah. Then you wake up the next day, hike 10 miles, and your culinary reward is whatever you managed to shove into a Ziploc bag 6 hours earlier.
A warm, squished granola bar.
Exactly. It is a high-friction, high-emission logistical nightmare.
And the thesis of Digital Adventures is that high-net-worth individuals don't actually want to rough it.
No, they don't want the unpredictability.
Right. So they introduce the hyper-connected way. And it starts with a booking experience that doesn't even feel like booking.
Yeah, it's entirely A2A agent-to-agent orchestration.
Which is fascinating. Like, explain how that works for the guest.
So this is where we see the first implementation of their sovereign digital infrastructure. 6 months out from your trip, you aren't scrolling through a cumbersome web interface.
You're not looking at Expedia.
No. You aren't navigating availability calendars or typing in credit card details. Your personal AI agent, the one that's already managing your daily schedule interfaces directly with the Digital Adventures AI agent.
And they do this via a dedicated secure network they call Pawnee.USA.
Yes, Pawnee.US. It's essentially high-frequency trading algorithms, but applied to hospitality logistics.
Wow.
Your agent knows you prefer a specific ambient temperature in your room, a certain dietary profile, your preferred hiking difficulty.
So it just negotiates the whole thing.
It negotiates the entire 3-day itinerary machine to machine.
That's incredible.
It locks down the luxury off-grid biochar pod, secures the private autonomous shuttles, coordinates the drone flight paths for your mid-hike meals.
All before you even pack a bag.
The entire ecosystem is pre-orchestrated, and it remains completely invisible to the user.
Right. From the guest perspective, they just say a voice command to their wearable device, like organize a weekend isolation retreat in West Virginia.
Exactly. The friction of planning is outsourced entirely to the compute layer.
Okay, so fast forward to Friday evening. You arrive at this secluded 25-acre site in the forest. You walk up to this glass-fronted ecopod.
And this pod is completely off-grid.
Right. Physically severed from municipal water and power. Yet you walk in, and it's perfectly climate-controlled.
You have high-speed encrypted Wi-Fi beamed in locally.
And there is a steaming hydrotherapy hot tub on the deck.
Which is crazy when you think about the energy required for that.
We are definitely going to dive into how they are heating that hot tub shortly, because it's a brilliant piece of thermal engineering that ties directly into their massive AI server rack.
Yeah, the thermal loop is genius.
Well, let's stay with the guest experience for a second. Saturday morning rolls around, you step out of your pod, and there is an autonomous Pawnee hybrid dune buggy just silently waiting for you.
Listed in their bill of materials at $99,000 per unit.
$99,000.
Yeah. And it requires no driver, no manual coordination.
It just autonomously transports you from your pod,
yeah,
navigates the rugged terrain to an isolated trailhead, drops you off, and then immediately routes itself back to an off-grid charging pad.
Just sits in standby mode until you need it again.
So you are dropped at the trailhead. You hike 5 miles deep into the gorge. And the document explicitly notes this specific geographical area is a total cellular dead zone.
Yeah, the topography blocks traditional RF signals entirely.
Yet at mile 5, your wearable pings. Your AI agent asks if you're ready for your customized bison bowl.
Right.
So how are they achieving data transmission in a geographic dead zone without, you know, launching a satellite?
It's all done through a highly localized proprietary mesh network.
Okay, break that down for us.
They deploy a series of trailside beacons. They call them WSP in a box base gateways.
WSP in a box.
Yeah. These nodes, which run about $1,497 each, are seated all throughout the hiking trails.
So they're just hidden out in the woods.
Exactly. And your wearable acts as a local node on that same network, connecting via a low-power, high-bandwidth protocol directly to this mesh.
So your AI agent processes the request locally, routes it through the mesh back to the central hub, and triggers the logistics chain.
Spot on. And that logistics chain is wild.
Oh, it really is. Because 20 minutes after you tap your wrist, a drone launches. But it doesn't just launch from, like, a wooden helipad next to the main office.
No, no. The business plan details a $797,000 Pawnee flagship TAV.
TAV, that stands for tactical vehicle, right?
Yes. It's this massive all-weather vehicle that acts as a mobile launch pad.
Unbelievable.
So the drone takes off from this mobile base, tracks your precise real-time GPS coordinates as you continue to hike, navigates the canopy, and lowers the thermal meal pod on a winch.
It's literally localized concierge military logistics.
That's the perfect way to describe it. It creates a perfectly closed loop of service.
Yeah, because as you finish your meal and continue your hike, those same trail beacons are actively calculating your walking speed.
Exactly. They calculate your gait and speed, pass that telemetry back to the vehicle orchestration agent, and that $99,000 buggy dispatches itself.
So it arrives at your extraction point exactly 3 minutes before you emerge from the tree line.
Zero waiting. Zero manual communication.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the technology is undeniably incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I have to ask a philosophical question here. If I am being shuttled by an autonomous buggy, communicating via a proprietary trailside mesh network, and having hot meals winched down to me by drones. Is this still the wild?
It's a great question.
I mean, haven't we just built an outdoor, decentralized luxury hotel? Yep. Where is the line between actually escaping to the wilderness and just dragging an invisible, hyper-curated city into the woods with us?
What's fascinating here is that that tension is exactly what makes this business plan so lucrative.
Really? How so?
Digital Adventures is making a massive calculated bet on human psychology. They understand that for this specific demographic, the appeal of the wilderness is purely aesthetic.
Okay, I see what you mean.
The high net worth consumer wants the visual isolation of the forest, the serenity of the canopy, the status of an off-grid location.
But they don't want the bug bites and the cold.
They outright reject the physical discomfort that historically accompanies it.
Right. They want the raw, unfiltered Instagram photo, but they want the ambient temperature perfectly modulated to 72 degrees while they take it.
Precisely. The core thesis here is that the friction, the planning, the dead zones, the vulnerability to the elements is not an intrinsic necessary part of returning to nature.
It's just a bug in the old system.
Exactly. It is simply a technological limitation that legacy hospitality brands haven't had the hardware to solve.
So Digital Adventures is basically selling the illusion of absolute rugged isolation while secretly wrapping the guest in this impenetrable, invisible web of hyper-connectivity.
It's curated serendipity, and it's all powered by this sovereign tech stack.
But providing that level of invisible curation, I mean, powering autonomous buggies, keeping AI agents processing local data, charging drone fleets, heating hot tubs, that requires immense amounts of power.
Massive amounts.
Look, you can't just run an extension cord to a pine tree.
No, you definitely cannot.
If you're building a tech utopia in a cellular dead zone, you have to generate your own electricity. And that brings us to the operational core of this document, how they are bypassing the legacy power grid.
Yeah, this is where the business strategy gets really interesting. Because when you analyze the macro environment, the U.S. outdoor recreation market is staggering.
What are the numbers on that?
It's a $1.1 trillion annual consumer market.
Trillion with a T.
Trillion with a T. The demand for high-end experiential travel is massive. But traditional real estate developers face an almost insurmountable bottleneck when trying to build in rural locations.
Right, what they call the permitting wall.
Exactly, the permitting wall.
So let's look at the reality for a legacy developer. If you want to build a luxury resort in a mountainous area, your first hurdle is utility interconnection.
You have to petition the local energy provider to run heavy-duty transmission lines to your specific parcel.
And because rural topography is just a nightmare to build through, and the legacy grid infrastructure is chronically outdated, you get thrown into this regional interconnection queue.
And those wait times are absurd. We are talking about wait times of 5 to 7 years.
Just to get the legal approval to hook up to the grid.
Just for the approval. That delay completely destroys the ROI of a capital-intensive project.
I mean, yeah. You are carrying the cost of the land and the early development debt for half a decade before you can welcome a single paying guest.
And even if you endure that 5 to 7 year queue, you are forced to pay astronomical capex just to physically string those miles of utility poles yourself.
Right. The power company doesn't just do it for free.
Exactly. And once connected, your entire operation is highly vulnerable to grid instability.
Like mountain snowstorms taking down lines.
Constantly. Plus, you are locked into fluctuating utility tariffs dictated by the Public Service Commission.
You are at the absolute mercy of a centralized bureaucracy.
Completely.
So Digital Adventures looked at that 5 to 7 year timeline and decided to legally opt out.
They found a loophole.
Well, a specific jurisdictional framework in West Virginia that acts as a regulatory fast pass. And, you know, we are simply analyzing their legal strategy here impartially. We are taking a stance on the legislation itself, but it is a brilliant piece of regulatory maneuvering. They are filing under West Virginia House Bill 2014.
Specifically, it's West Virginia Code Section 5B221 and 24221A.
That's a mouthful.
It really is. But this legislation established the framework for certified microgrid development programs.
Okay, so what does that mean for them?
By structuring their entire power generation architecture to comply with this specific bill, Digital Adventures can petition the state to have their 25-acre resort designated as a statutory certified microgrid district.
And the timeline difference is staggering. I mean, instead of waiting 5 to 7 years in a transmission queue, this statutory designation grants them project approval in 60 days.
2 months.
2 months. And they have the legal authority to break ground on their private power generation.
But beyond just the sheer velocity of the approval, the microgrid designation fundamentally alters their legal classification.
Because they're no longer just a hotel.
Right. They are explicitly exempted from Public Service Commission rate regulations. They are legally permitted to generate, manage, and consume their own private power grid without being classified, taxed, or regulated as a traditional public utility.
So basically, instead of waiting in line for years and paying a fortune to hook up an extension cord to the main grid, they found a legislative fast pass. It's like a regulatory loophole that let them build a private, off-grid power island.
That's exactly what it is. In fact, the SWOT analysis from the text points this out as their greatest internal strength.
The PSC exemption.
Yes, it allows them to build capacity in 1/10 the time and cost of legacy competitors who are stuck waiting for utility interconnections.
But having the legal right to generate power is only half the battle.
You actually have to generate it.
Right. Efficiently and cleanly. So the document details their hardware solution,
yeah,
which they call the Pawnee Power Genset.
The flagship site requires significant continuous energy, obviously. So they deploy a redundant array of 12 of these Pawnee Power Gensets.
And these are big machines.
Yeah, these are 45 kilowatt rotary generators. They come in at roughly $50,000 per unit.
But the critical innovation here isn't the generator itself, right? It's the fuel architecture.
Exactly. Because they are not trucking thousands of gallons of diesel fuel up a mountain road every week.
Yeah, that would introduce massive logistical friction.
And it would completely destroy the eco-friendly, sustainable branding that these high net worth consumers are paying for.
You can't sell an EcoPod if it smells like a truck stop.
Exactly. So they are utilizing biomass syngas.
Syngas, break that down.
They take local wood waste, agricultural byproducts, forestry debris.
Basically just dead branches and brush.
Right. And they run it through a gasification vessel. The intense heat and the complete absence of oxygen breaks the biomass down into a clean-burning synthetic gas.
And then that syngas is piped directly into the rotary generator.
You got it. This closed-loop system gives them 540 kilowatts of continuous prime power at an incredibly low cost.
The numbers on this are crazy. We are looking at an operational cost of slightly under 4 cents per kilowatt hour.
$0.038 to be exact. When you compare that localized production cost against commercial utility tariffs, the delta is massive.
They are securing continuous zero carbon prime power for pennies.
But, and here's where the math and the business plan starts to look highly suspicious.
Yeah, let's talk about the math.
Until you realize what they're actually building, it doesn't make sense. Let's look at the load distribution.
Okay.
They are setting up 12 industrial generators producing 540 kilowatts of continuous power. That is capable of generating 4.25 million kilowatt hours annually.
4.25 million.
But they only have 6 EcoPods, a couple of charging cots for the drones, and a few dune buggies.
Right, it's a tiny footprint physically.
The hospitality infrastructure only consumes about 394,000 kilowatt hours a year.
So they're utilizing less than 10% of their total power generation to actually run the resort.
Exactly. What are they doing with the remaining 3.8 million kilowatt hours of localized off-grid electricity?
This brings us to what I think is the true genius of the business plan, the dual revenue hospitality engine.
It changes everything.
In legacy commercial real estate, particularly in hospitality, electricity is just a massive sunken operating costs.
It just sits on the balance sheet, eroding profit margins month after month.
Right. But Digital Adventures views electricity as a profit center. They completely flip that paradigm.
By funneling that massive energy surplus directly into an on-site edge AI compute module.
They are essentially running a high-performance data center hidden in the forest.
Yes. The hardware listed is a Ryo CC 1000 GPU compute enclosure.
And what's inside that enclosure?
It is packed with 320 H100 equivalent GPUs.
Wow.
For context, these are the ultra-premium gold standard silicon chips used to train large language models and advanced AI neural networks.
They are incredibly expensive and notoriously power-hungry.
Extremely power-hungry. And AI developers are currently facing a global shortage of affordable, available energy to run these clusters.
So Digital Adventures is generating dirt-cheap, off-grid power and feeding it directly into this compute rack.
To sell compute as a service, or CAS, to the broader market.
But this isn't just an opportunistic revenue stream, is it?
No, it is a structural legal requirement.
Explain that.
If you look closely at the framework of West Virginia House Bill 2014, maintaining that coveted microgrid status requires strict adherence to the captive power requirement.
Which means they can't just act like a rogue power plant.
Right. The legislation dictates that to avoid being regulated as a public utility, the microgrid must internally consume at least 70% of the total power it generates on site.
Oh, so you can't just spin up 12 generators and dump all that cheap electricity back onto the municipal grid for a massive profit.
Exactly. The AI compute enclosure is the necessary electrical sink.
That is brilliant.
The 320 GPUs absorb a massive 3.28 million kilowatt hours annually.
So when you combine the AI compute load with the baseline hospitality consumption of the EcoPods and the vehicle charging,
their total captive power ratio hits 86.42%.
Which safely satisfies the 70% legislative mandate.
Exactly. They safely clear the hurdle by using an AI data center to burn through the excess power.
It is an incredibly elegant piece of regulatory engineering. And the elegance extends to the physical engineering as well.
The thermal loop.
Yes. Because think about a traditional data center. You have thousands of servers running 24/7, crunching complex algorithms.
Yeah.
They generate an extreme amount of thermal energy.
In a standard facility, you spend a fortune on industrial HVAC systems just to blast chilled air into the server rooms to keep the chips from melting.
It's a massive secondary energy drain. But Digital Adventures captures that waste heat.
The business plan details a highly efficient thermal recovery loop.
So they take the engine exhaust jackets from the gensets and the ambient heat from the GPU compute enclosures,
which produces a 65 degrees Celsius coolant return line.
And they take that 65 degree thermal byproduct and pipe it directly beneath the foundational slabs of the biochar EcoPods.
It provides total radiant floor heating for the guests in the dead of winter without drawing a single extra watt of electricity.
And as we teased earlier, they run that same thermal loop out to the decks to continuously heat the outdoor hydrotherapy hot tubs.
It's amazing. The massive computational load of the AI servers is literally steaming the guests' hot tubs.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because when you look at the projected cash flow, a stark reality emerges.
Yeah, the numbers tell the true story.
The on-site AI compute module is projected to generate $5.55 million in high-margin annual revenue.
Right.
But the actual lodging, renting out the 6 EcoPods to high-net-worth tech executives, is projected to bring in just under $1 million.
So let's call it what it is.
Right. Are we looking at a luxury eco resort that happens to have a clever data center attached? Or are we looking at a decentralized off-grid AI data center that uses a 6-cabin hotel as a legal front to get cheap deregulated power?
I love that framing because it is unequivocally a data center first.
It has to be.
And from a commercial real estate perspective, this structure brilliantly solves the most critical vulnerability in the outdoor hospitality sector.
Which is?
The revenue volatility gap.
Ah, seasonality.
Exactly. Ecotourism is highly seasonal. If you own a high-end glamping resort in the Appalachians, you make all your money during the peak fall foliage and the spring bloom.
But in January and February, when the gorge is covered in snow and ice,
your occupancy rate flatlines. Your revenue drops to near zero, but your fixed costs, land debt, maintenance, baseline heating, they remain entirely static.
It creates massive cash flow volatility.
But by pairing the hospitality infrastructure with an aggressive behind-the-meter AI compute operation, they completely decouple their primary revenue generation from the weather patterns.
Because the H100 GPUs do not care if there was a blizzard outside.
In fact, the sub-zero ambient mountain temperatures actually increase the thermal efficiency of the cooling loop.
Oh, that's wild. So they run even better in the winter.
Exactly. The compute revenue streams in 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, ensuring the entire operation remains massively cash flow positive, even in the dead of winter.
The AI compute effectively subsidizes the resort.
It completely de-risks the entire venture.
But, you know, pulling this off, executing a symbiotic tech hospitality fusion of this magnitude, it requires a highly sophisticated physical footprint.
You don't just patch this together with off-the-shelf consumer tech.
Let's look at the shopping list. We have their full hardware bill of materials here, the Be A Bum. And the total initial capital expenditure for this single flagship hub sits at $8.19 million.
When you analyze the sourcing on that $8.19 million, it's heavily concentrated.
Yeah, they're relying almost exclusively on D-Reticular LLC's Generation 5 Sovereign Stack hardware.
It's an end-to-end proprietary ecosystem.
Let's break down where the capital is actually flowing, because it validates what we were just saying about the core business model.
The single largest line item on this entire BM is the high-density GPU rack.
Housing those 320 H100 chips costs $5.8 million.
Which is the lion's share of the budget.
Over 70% of their total startup capital is allocated directly to computational power.
It completely dwarfs the cost of the actual real estate or the lodging structures.
It proves that the hospitality component is simply the regulatory wrapper around a massive compute play.
But the logistics hardware required to maintain that wrapper is equally fascinating.
Oh, for sure. We discussed the autonomous dune buggies, but let's look at the Pawnee flagship TV that we mentioned earlier.
The tactical vehicle.
Yeah. One single unit is budgeted at $797,000.
It's a massive expense.
Why does a 25-acre eco-resort require an $800,000 tactical transport vehicle? Seems like an absurd over-allocation of capital.
It does, until you read their risk mitigation strategy.
Okay, let's hear it.
In any rigorous business plan, the SWOT analysis dictates capital deployment. Under external threats, they specifically identify severe, unpredictable Appalachian mountain weather.
Because a sudden squall, or high-velocity wind shear, or heavy snow
can easily ground their entire fleet of $25,000 cargo drones.
And if the drones are grounded, the hyperconnected illusion shatters.
Exactly. The VIP guest doesn't get their farm-to-table bison bowl.
The friction returns. The aesthetic is ruined.
And you risk catastrophic brand damage among a highly influential demographic.
So the TAV is essentially an $800,000 physical insurance policy against the elements.
Yes. While it normally functions as an elevated mobile drone launch pad to optimize flight paths, its primary purpose is redundancy.
If the airspace is compromised, this ruggedized tracked vehicle can autonomously navigate almost any terrain in any weather condition.
To ensure the physical logistics chain, whether it's meal delivery, emergency medical evacuation, or guest transport, remains completely unbroken.
That makes total sense.
Uh-huh.
But physical redundancy is only part of the equation. Digital redundancy is arguably more important in this model.
Oh, absolutely. The entire ecosystem, the buggies, the drones, the AI booking agents, the climate control, it all relies on seamless data flow in a geographic dead zone.
They're essentially building a localized internet using that Wisp in a Box series.
The B-bomb reveals a very specific multi-tiered network topology.
Break down the telecom mesh for us.
So they deployed 4 agentic gateways at roughly $10,000 each.
Okay, and what do those do?
Those likely handle the heavy computational routing and interface directly with the main GPU rack.
Makes sense.
Then they have 4 LTE dual one gateways at about $5,887 each. That provides robust external backhaul when it's available.
And the trail beacons?
Right. They have 12 base sovereign gateways at $4,497 each, which are seeded throughout the trails and ecopods.
But this isn't a traditional hub-and-spoke network, right, where every device has to ping a central cell tower.
No. They are utilizing a proprietary operating system called the Rios kernel.
Rios kernel.
Yes, coupled with OpenClaw protocols.
So how does this architecture actually prevent dead zones?
OpenClaw enables a true self-healing peer-to-peer mesh network.
Oh.
Every single piece of hardware with a D-Reticular chip. The trail beacon, the drone passing overhead, the dune buggy parked at the trailhead, and the guest's wearable acts as an active node.
So data doesn't have to travel back to a central router.
Exactly. It hops laterally from node to node.
So if a tree falls and crushes one of those base sovereign gateways on the trail,
the Rios kernel instantly detects the node failure and autonomously reroutes the telemetry data through the nearest passing drone or buggy.
That is incredible. It creates a zero-friction environment where the AI orchestration can function locally with zero latency.
Entirely independent of the broader global internet.
The physical structures themselves are also deeply integrated into this sustainability loop. Let's look at the actual lodging for a second.
The biochar ecopods.
Yeah. There are 6 of them, costing $45,000 each.
Compared to a $5.8 million server rack, the real estate is incredibly cheap.
It really is. But the material science behind these pods is fascinating. They are utilizing structural biochar composite panels.
This is a brilliant example of extreme vertical integration. We discussed earlier how the Pawnee gensets operate on biomass gasification to create syngas.
Right.
The primary physical byproduct of that gasification process is ash.
Okay.
Through a specific chemical process, they capture that ash and integrate it into advanced composite building materials.
Wait, really? So the literal waste product generated by their power plant becomes the structural walls of their guest cabins?
Exactly. They construct them at a place they call Node 5 over in Monongalia County.
That is so clever.
And biochar has incredible physical properties for this specific application. It provides phenomenal thermal resistance, boasting an R38 insulation rating.
Which is critical for maintaining efficiency when you are relying on passive radiant floor heating in sub-zero mountain winters.
Exactly. It is also inherently fire resistant. But most importantly for their branding, it features a negative carbon embodied intensity.
Right, because by manufacturing the walls of the EcoPod from pyrolyzed carbon that would have otherwise just decomposed and released methane into the atmosphere?
They are actually sequestering more carbon than they emit during construction.
It's a carbon-negative structure. That is a massive selling point for the eco-conscious tech executive.
It plays perfectly into the aesthetic they are selling.
But I look at this BOM, and I see incredible operational complexity.
It is intensely complex.
We're talking about autonomous dune buggies, drone fleets, biomass gasification vessels, and ultra-high-end, liquid-cooled supercomputer racks running complex neural networks.
Running on a proprietary, self-healing telecom mesh.
Right. So what happens when a drone crashes? Or a valve sticks on a gasifier at 2 a.m. in the middle of a West Virginia winter? Who fixes it?
That is the million-dollar question.
You can't just call a local plumber or a generic IT contractor for a Rios kernel update.
No, you absolutely cannot. And the business plan explicitly acknowledges this vulnerability. This is a massive internal weakness.
Because the operational requirements far exceed the capabilities of a traditional hospitality workforce.
You do not need housekeepers or bellhops to run this facility. You need systems engineers, network architects, and thermodynamic specialists.
And sourcing and retaining that level of highly specialized technical talent in a remote rural location usually requires massive salary premiums.
Premiums that would destroy their operating margins.
Which brings us to the operational brilliance of how they solved the labor gap.
The university pipeline.
Yes. They found a way to staff this hyper-complex facility with highly capable technical talent without carrying a massive corporate payroll.
They established a formalized partnership with the West Virginia University Statler College of Engineering and the Brad D. Smith Outdoor Economic Development Collaborative.
It's just so smart. They basically transformed the flagship resort from a standard commercial entity into a funded living laboratory.
The document outlines a highly structured pipeline where they integrate a continuous cohort of 14 undergraduate and graduate WVU energy student fellows.
And these aren't just interns making coffee, right?
Not at all. These engineering students are the operational lifeblood of the facility.
So how are they compensating them?
The business model specifically diverts 2.43% of the gross resort revenues to fully fund their tuition and provide monthly stipends.
In exchange, the students get unprecedented hands-on experience.
Right. They are managing a sovereign technology stack, balancing microgrid loads, optimizing A2A reservation nodes.
They are literally sitting in the control room, managing the drone overwatch.
Turning the wrenches and analyzing the telemetry on the biomass gasifiers.
It's an incredibly synergistic loop. The students receive a debt-free education and resume-defining experience in edge computing and microgrid management.
The university secures a cutting-edge research facility for their engineering department.
And Digital Adventures secures a highly skilled, subsidized, continuously refreshing technical workforce that is deeply incentivized to ensure the system runs flawlessly.
It perfectly aligns with state-level economic development goals, too, which likely smoothed the way for that 60-day House Bill 2014 microgrid approval.
Oh, I bet it did. It completely insulates their labor costs. And when you look at how tightly controlled those costs are against the revenue projections, the financial feasibility of this model is staggering.
Let's break down the year one financial projections because these numbers defy every convention of traditional commercial real estate.
As we established, the total initial CapEx is $8,195,464.
But their projected year one gross revenue is $7.5 million.
Think about that velocity.
It's almost a one-to-one ratio in year one.
Let's look at the exact composition of that $7.5 million because it tells the whole story.
The revenue streams are highly diversified but heavily weighted.
the traditional lodging, the nightly rate for the six EcoPods generates $996,000.
Okay, almost a million.
The curated experience packages add $320,000. The localized drone deliveries and automated logistics bring in $162,000.
They also project $340,000 from the sale of excess biochar and carbon credits.
And $150,000 from monetizing the Depend Mesh telecom network.
But all of those streams combined are a fraction of the core engine.
Right, the AI compute case compute as a service. That single operational unit is projected to generate $5,550,144 in year one alone.
So over 70% of their gross revenue in the first 12 months is generated by the server rack sitting quietly behind the cabins.
Exactly. And because they have essentially eliminated their energy costs through the biomass microgrid.
And subsidized their highly skilled labor through the university fellowship program.
Their operating margins are historically anomalous. The financial model projects an 83.4% EBITDA margin in year one.
83.4%. For context, if a premier luxury hotel brand achieves a 25 to 30% operational profit margin, it's considered a massive success.
An 83% margin fundamentally changes the nature of the investment. It yields $6.26 million in raw operational profit in the very first year.
Which brings us to the metric that every institutional investor focuses on. The simple payback period.
The time it takes for the initial investment to be completely recouped from cash flow.
Exactly. And the payback period on this $8.2 million Hytor complex facility is modeled at 1.31 years.
Or 15.7 months.
In traditional asset development, a 7 to 10 year payback period is standard.
A 15-month payback on heavy infrastructure is almost unheard of outside of highly volatile tech startups.
It proves that the AI compute revenue isn't just a bonus. It acts as a massive financial accelerant that completely neutralizes the initial CapEx debt almost instantly.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, when you extrapolate that velocity over a decade, the returns become astronomical.
Yeah, let's look at the 10-year outlook.
The unlevered 10-year internal rate of return is projected at 168.4%.
Wow.
And the net present value, utilizing a standard 10% discount rate, sits at a staggering $612.4 million.
$612 million. And here's the reality of modern capitalism. If you have a model that pays for its own heavy infrastructure in 15 months and immediately begins kicking off millions in high-margin cash flow, you do not just build one.
You build an empire.
You scale it aggressively, which is exactly what Section 6 of the document details.
The 10-year strategic scaling roadmap.
The New River Gorge site is explicitly labeled as just a proof of concept. They outline this highly aggressive roadmap to transform this single deployment into a national decentralized infrastructure network.
Let's track their expansion phases.
Okay. Phase one, which covers years one and two, is titled Conquering Appalachia.
This is the stabilization phase. They deploy the flagship hub, secure the statutory HB 2014 microgrid exemption, refine the biomass gasification process, and fully integrate the WVU engineering student pipeline.
Once the operational model is proven, they immediately trigger phase two, spanning years three through five. They call it the cluster expansion.
They intend to rapidly replicate this exact blueprint across 15 high-demand outdoor recreation hubs strictly within the West Virginia jurisdiction.
Right, to leverage those existing regulatory relationships.
Exactly. They specifically target high-traffic state park adjacencies like Snowshoe, Blackwater Falls, and Seneca Rocks.
And to support this density, they plan to scale the university fellowship pipeline from 14 to over 100 dedicated student operators.
But phase two also introduces a massive shift in their supply chain.
Yeah, they aren't just going to keep buying hardware piecemeal. They plan to build Node 5.
A centralized, vertically integrated manufacturing and assembly facility located on a reclaimed coal brownfield site.
So they will bring the manufacturing of the biochar EcoPods and the localized hardware mounts entirely in-house, further driving down their CapEx as they scale.
And that vertical integration sets the stage for phase three,
which is years six through 10, the national franchise model.
Having perfected the physical hardware integration and the sovereign software stack in Appalachia, they plan to package the entire ecosystem into a turnkey deployable franchise.
They are targeting 50 plus deployments clustered around the perimeter of major U.S. national parks.
Places like Yellowstone, Zion, Acadia.
Areas with massive high net worth tourism demand, chronic grid infrastructure issues, and significant cellular dead zones.
They will license the Aros A2A reservation engine, the OpenClaw mesh architecture, and the microgrid blueprints to third-party regional developers.
And the financial projection for year 10 is just It's an eye-watering $305 million in gross revenue.
Maintaining an 86.6% EBITDA margin across the network.
Because the core asset, the microgrid, powering these edge compute, is entirely decentralized and physically sovereign. It isn't tethered to legacy grid limitations.
You can theoretically drop this exact blueprint anywhere on Earth that possesses raw biomass and a commercial demand for low-latency edge computing.
Think about the magnitude of that. I mean, they aren't just building a hotel chain. They're building a decentralized, franchisable, totally off-grid version of Amazon Web Services.
That happens to rent out luxury cabins on top of the servers.
Exactly. It is an infrastructure play disguised as a vacation.
The Wilderness Resort is merely the aesthetically pleasing, legally required, eco-friendly shell that houses, cools, and regulates a highly profitable distributed AI computing network.
So what does this all mean? When we step back and look at the totality of this deep dive, Digital Adventures has drafted a masterclass in exploiting regulatory frameworks.
Absolutely.
By deeply understanding the nuances of West Virginia's HB 2014, they completely bypassed a 5-year transmission queue and deregulated their energy production.
And more importantly, they executed a brilliant collision of two totally unrelated industries.
The synergy is counterintuitive but flawless.
Think about it. AI compute requires massive, cheap energy and robust thermal cooling.
Right. And luxury wilderness hospitality requires pristine, isolated real estate and operates with chronic revenue seasonality.
By fusing them together via sovereign hardware and biomass microgrids, they completely de-risk both models.
The high-margin AI compute subsidizes the massive hospitality capex and flattens the seasonal volatility.
And the hospitality infrastructure provides the legal mechanism to consume the power off-grid while physically cooling the server racks through radiant heat transfer.
They feed off each other perfectly. It completely de-risks a massive capital investment.
You know, it leaves you with a really provocative thought to mull over. We've always thought of technology as something that separates us from nature. But if an off-grid microgrid powering AI agents is what it takes to completely eliminate the friction, the emissions, and the grid dependence of our wilderness experiences, is it possible that hyperconnectivity is actually the only sustainable way to return to the wild?
A decentralized, self-funding grid hiding in plain sight. That is definitely something to chew on.
It really makes you look at every off-grid cabin a little differently.
It does. The next time you find yourself deep in the woods, eating a soggy sandwich and searching for a cell signal, just remember that a completely frictionless, drone-delivered, AI-orchestrated alternative might already be mapping the topography.
Just waiting for the node to come online.
Exactly. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the business plan of Digital Adventures. I hope this analysis encourages you to think about how these dual revenue, off-grid models might disrupt your own industries. The playbook is changing rapidly. We'll see you next time.